Welcome to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Your host, Carl Nordgren, will teach you how to take an expansive view on what it means to be creative and entrepreneurial. Carl is an entrepreneur, novelist, and a lifelong student. For 20 years, he has been learning how to help folks grow their creative capacities. Now, here's Carl.
Happy Sunday and welcome to you all. This is Carl Nordgren. You're listening to 97.9 The Hill. They bring you this show that I've been doing now. This is the 137th show. It's the fifth show that I've done when I have Flicka in the studio with me. Flicka's my faithful companion, a wonderful dog, and she's here at my feet right now. I just have so much fun bringing her in and having her love on all the people here that deserve to be loved. There's some great, great, great folks here. So this is the show that has proclaimed and acts on this proclamation that nothing is as important as helping you be your most creative and your most entrepreneurial selves. There was times where I used to say there was nothing more important. But as each year has passed, I've come to understand, it's probably not just hyperbole to say that there is nothing as important as being your most creative and entrepreneurial self. I gave you some evidence of that last week when I said, if you listened to last week's show, I began by acknowledging that I was throwing away the script for that show because right before I left home to come here for the show, I saw on my news feed the report that a Senate committee had just released where they predict, and that prediction is also a warning, that in the next 10 years, 100 million jobs will be stripped from our economy. And if you don't know, I didn't know, so I had to look it up. There's 160 million jobs in the economy. So that means roughly two-thirds of the jobs this report suggests will be lost. And just 2 days ago, I saw the New York Times reported on a leaked internal document that they got from Amazon that they're planning themselves to remove 600,000 jobs from their workforce with robotics. The Senate report says it's AI and robotics and other office automation technologies that are going to have this extraordinary impact on employment. So what do you do? What do you do when faced with that sort of future, an unknowable future? That's been a big part of my message to us all, folks, is that the future is unknowable. We have no idea what the future is going to be like. The futurists say when they submit a report to a client that their most likely scenario isn't very likely. And that was before this dynamic was captured in these numbers that I've just shared with you. How do you predict a future? Who knows what's going to happen when 100 million jobs, let's say if even 60 million jobs, get stripped from the economy over the next 10 years? Well, I have some thoughts about that. In fact, the book that I submitted to my publisher last month that I mentioned a couple times in the previous show, and I kept just referring to it as my book is titled Common Ground for Us. And this book anticipates this sort of dynamic, this sort of unknowable future, and gives some ideas to us as individuals. The big ambition of the book is that I also give some ideas for political leadership and community leadership about what do we do to prepare for this future of unknowable unknowns. One of the concepts that I find on this common ground for us, and to remind us all, if you're a regular listener, you might have a sense of this. This common ground is found in the fact that 98% of us are born with such remarkable creative qualities that NASA says our level of achievement as 4- and 5-year-olds is creative genius achievement on the same creative assessment that they use with their scientists and engineers. When they gave that same assessment to 4- and 5-year-olds, 98% of us performed as creative geniuses according to NASA's grading scale. That is common ground, folks, that I assure you, having shared that story with nearly 10,000 people in workshops and courses and other venues, this is as attractive to the left as it is to the right. So what wonderful common ground we have. As I explored that common ground, I found commonwealth. I found the concept of commonwealth was well suited to and nurtured by this common ground for us. And what do I mean by commonwealth? I'm going to give you three examples that I love to share. Here's the first example. If you were to ask 10 first-time entrepreneurs, do you want to go start your business all by yourself? Or do you want to come into this new venture incubator? Well, you will bring your resources, your talent, your knowledge, your contacts, as will the other 9 founding CEOs bring theirs, and you're going to share these. You're going to create some commonwealth that each of you then benefits from as you apply that commonwealth, aspects of that commonwealth to the work that you are doing. My bet, and I've worked with a lot of young entrepreneurs, I'd be surprised if fewer than 9 out of 10 would, if fewer than 9 out of 10 would agree and want to go into that incubator. I would anticipate that 10 out of 10 would choose the Commonwealth incubator strategy to build their businesses. I'm not really an Illinois farm boy, but I can play one in a movie. I've spent enough time as a kid in and around farmers. A bunch of my grade school and high school friends were still farm boys. And so I love this story about the Illinois sweet corn farmer who won the blue ribbon at the county fair 5 years in a row. And with that fifth win, finally a local journalist noted that this was going on and came to talk to the farmer, to ask the farmer, what's your the secret of your success? How do you do this? And the farmer, outstanding in his field, said to the journalist, well, you see this corn that's in the ground right now? When I harvest it, I'm going to keep the very best of it as seed corn for next year's crop. But I'm going to take half of that seed corn, and I'm going to share it with the farmers whose fields abut mine. And the journalist said, what? You're going to help your competition by giving them some of the same high-quality seed corn that you use? He said, no, you got to understand. You got to understand that when the breezes blow and the winds begin to stir and the pollen is drifting on the currents, it's going to come over and pollinate my crop. And so the very best way for me to make sure that my crop continually improves is by helping others improve their crop. So sharing his commonwealth with others benefits him. An example of commonwealth that was labeled socialism at the time was when FDR decided to put the nation back to work and had all these major projects, construction projects going on. Let's focus on just one of them, the Lincoln Tunnel, the tunnel that links New Jersey with Manhattan, an asset that's owned by the citizens of New York and the citizens of New Jersey. So it's a piece of commonwealth. Can you imagine, folks, if you can come up with any strategy for trying to estimate how much individual value has been created by that piece of commonwealth? How many small businesses have better access to suppliers and to customers? How many individuals have more opportunity for more work? How many social relationships have benefited from this piece of commonwealth? I don't think it's possible to imagine the incredible individual benefit that's come from this investment in commonwealth. Folks, please come on back from the break. We've got some more for you to talk about how to prepare for the future.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
Welcome back, and thanks for coming back. This is another show that's exploring the dramatic impact that the numbers are going to have on our economy when, if the Senate report is accurate, something approaching 100 million jobs will get stripped from the economy in the next 10 years. That committee is called HELP, an acronym for Health, Education, Labor, and what's the P? Pensions. And so, again, their estimate is, and it's very much couched as a warning, what's going to happen when up to 100 million jobs get removed from the economy in the next 10 years. Well, it sets up a bit of my content that I have been sharing with folks over the last couple of years as I've been exploring this idea of common ground and commonwealth, and does it have any value to political leadership to see these ideas? Can it inform their political leadership? Can it help them deliver optimistic messages for us about the future? Wouldn't you like to have an optimistic message about the future? Most folks appreciate most of the content most of the time, but more often than more than occasionally, I find that people didn't like this next idea I'm going to talk to us about, and that's the idea of a universal basic income. A universal basic income. Back before this 100 million number came to me, I would deliberately and carefully make the case that, hey, at some point there's going to be enough investment by businesses in office automation, in AI. Roughly 70% of the expenses for the typical business are associated with employees, so they're going to be highly motivated to find ways to bring in office automation, AI, robotics, to reduce that number, become more profitable. But there's going to be a time where enough jobs have been removed from the economy that the marketplace's purchasing power will seriously erode. And so businesses won't have any place to sell these highly profitable products, these highly profitable services that they now can bring to the market, because the marketplace doesn't have any money in their pockets. So the logic chain that I would build is that at that point, it becomes in the business's self-interest. It becomes necessary for their survival to have a universal basic income, to put money in the marketplace so these folks can buy their goods and services. And I was always surprised when people didn't really want me talking much about that. Well, it seems like these numbers just make it so evident that we have to have some intelligent thinking about a universal basic income. And it seems to me that if political leadership, community leadership could anticipate this coming, and declare that there is now going to be an all-hands-on-deck commitment to preparing us for the advent of this, and that can see two elements of this hands-on-deck effort. The first is to help us become our most creative and our entrepreneurial selves through policy, through governance, to do all they can to influence schools and other programs to make sure that they are cultivating our creative and our entrepreneurial qualities. The other effort that political leadership could make is investing in commonwealth, investing in schools as commonwealth. Boy, there's all kinds of research that shows a dollar invested in a public school has $10 to $12 benefit to the community. Well, some of those public schools are starting to invest in makerspaces. Wouldn't it be wonderful if there was just this wonderful network of makerspaces every community had, when many towns would have multiple makerspaces, where individuals who now have a monthly stipend to cover their cost of living can now pursue their love, their desires. What is it that they've always wanted to do? And we make these commonwealth facilities available to them where they can go in and follow their passion, develop their ideas, cultivate opportunities, work together. I've attended a couple of makerspace fairs over the last few years, and what I hear time and again is people declaring that here's one conversation. Boy, this part on this machine kept wearing out on me. It kept wearing out. I had to keep buying it. I had to keep wearing it out. It kept wearing out. I had to buy it again. Finally, I figured, well, let me make this part myself. I think I can. Oh, yeah, I can make it for myself. And then I realized that other people needed this same part. And before I knew it, I was in business for myself. Right? So if we have makerspaces available, perhaps this investment in a universal basic income won't be seen so much as another sort of necessary welfare program, but rather an investment in this vibrant creative capital that we're cultivating so that, well, let's talk about 100 million jobs lost, so that 100 million flowers can bloom, right? There'll be a bottoms-up grassroots renaissance that could occur in our country when, again, astute political leadership gives us an optimistic message about what we can do, how we should be preparing for this future where so many jobs are going to be stripped out of the economy. I don't know that there's any – I'd be surprised if there's anybody now who believes that's not going to happen, that AI, that robotics, that other office automation technologies are going to recede in their impact on our economy. It can only grow, is all I can imagine. And so if, again, political leaderships were to embrace that and lead us with a f- with a positive message, the most rational and the most optimistic message, right? The most rational and optimistic preparation that we can do for the future of unknowable unknowns, the most rational thing we can do is to cultivate our creative and our entrepreneurial qualities, to be our most adaptive, our most resilient, our most collaborative, our most imaginative selves. That's rational that you would want to cultivate those qualities as you face a future of unknowable unknowns. It's also optimistic, and again, so badly do we need optimistic messages right now. It's optimistic because it plays to our strengths. This is who we are. We're creative people. And so help me cultivate, help me develop, help me grow my creative and my entrepreneurial qualities. That's an optimistic message because that's who we are. That's what we're good at. Some people will also consider it optimistic because it is rational. It's a rational thing to do to cultivate our creative and our entrepreneurial qualities in the face of all these unknowable unknowns. And so wouldn't you be very – and excuse me for interrupting myself. It's a way that political leadership and community leadership can serve us even before they get elected, right? Just by telling us the stories about this. We love hearing stories about how wonderfully creative we are. Our nation so badly wants to see itself as the most creative nation. I think it's a patriotic message that leadership can be delivering, that it's good for you as an individual. It's good for us as a nation to be the most creative and entrepreneurial nation we can possibly be as we face all these extraordinary disruptions that are just happening right now and are just going to grow over time. Folks, we got one more segment. I hope you come on back.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
Welcome back. Thanks for coming back. I hope you're going to have a wonderful, wonderful week. This is the show that believes that there is nothing as important as growing your creative and your entrepreneurial qualities, and I've been talking about that through the lens of all the dramatic changes that are happening and are going to continue to happen in the job market as jobs get stripped out of the market with the advent of AI, with the advent of robotics and other office automation. My advocacy is that political leadership help us prepare for this by helping us cultivate our creative and our entrepreneurial qualities and by investing in Commonwealth facilities like makerspaces. If you don't know what a makerspace is, I've mentioned it a couple of times. If you don't know, a makerspace is a public place. Sometimes you have to pay a prescription, a subscription. It's also associated sometimes with like schools. And they have just a collection of tools and supplies and resources. So you can go in and you have access to a loom. You can have access to a 3D printer. You can have access to hand tools. You can have access to power tools. And you can build that which you know you need to build. I just love this radio station, WCHL, that gives me the opportunity to share these messages with you. This is the best radio station in the state, folks, for 5 years in a row, and I sure appreciate that. Let me do my thing in telling these stories to you. This book that I just finished editing, I just got the publisher's edits back and just concluded my acceptance or rejection of their edits, is two things. It's helping each of us. It's got ideas about the particular creative qualities that help us prepare for the future. And it's a call to action to political leadership that this optimistic message that we can deliver about being our most creative and entrepreneurial selves is a message that would really serve them wonderfully politically because you're, first of all, standing on common ground, and we need so badly to be standing together on common ground. Well, here's some of the ideas. You've heard some of these if you're a regular listener of the show. Here's some of the ideas that we can do individually to cultivate ourselves. And as you are listening to these ideas, keep in mind you've got a friend, you've got a child, you've got a colleague that you can be bringing this to them and helping them cultivate their creative and entrepreneurial qualities because it's going to help you to work on your own, but it's going to help you even more when you're surrounded by people who are developing these qualities. The easiest one to talk about, the easiest one to administer, to exercise for yourself, is research out of the University of Munich that shows that when you stare at the color green for 30 seconds, it's the only color that had this kind of impact. When you stare at the color green for 30 seconds, you have a 25% improvement in performance over a series of very different creative exercises. 25% improvement, just 30 seconds of your time staring at the color green. I went out that very day and bought myself a green folder from an office supply store. I stare at green twice a day. I share green cards, green folders in all of my workshops for others. And when I'm staring at that green folder, not only am I getting the benefit, the immediate benefit of that lift from staring at green, it's also reminding me that this is who I am and I'm going to work really hard to be as creative and as entrepreneurial as I can possibly be. Why is green the only color that has a sort of impact? If you have a window, access to a window where you can look outside, look out that window, and everywhere in the world, the color of growth is green. Photosynthesis reflects green from the light that it absorbs. Our eyes detect more shades of green than any other color. So while the researchers from the University of Munich don't declare why they think green is the only color that has this impact, and they tested blue, they tested red, they tested yellow, and they tested gray, green was the only color that had this impact. They don't say why they think green is the only color. It sure seems to make sense to me that it's got to be somewhere in this fact that, you know, when as throughout human development, growth was green. Green was nourishment. So it doesn't surprise me that green's got that impact. The other thing you can do, folks, you want both of your hemispheres working together in this crazy future that we're facing, in this challenging future that we're facing, in this promising future that we're facing. You want both hemispheres of your brain working together. You want the left brain's analytical and logical qualities dancing and playing around with the right brain's nonlinear and imaginative qualities. Well, the way you integrate your brain is by taking a walk. I used to think that the creative boost that I got from taking a walk in the woods was the woods that was doing this to me, was the green of the woods, was the wonderful complexity that I would live into when I would go out in the woods. I now come to understand that it's the process, it's the act of walking. Walking, when you get into that rhythmic stride, your arms are swinging, that brings your two hemispheres together. And there's a latent effect to it as well. So take a walk, stare at green, become your most creative self, share this with others, and I hope you come back next week to listen to more.
This has been Exploring Your Creative Genius on 97.9 The Hill. You can listen to other episodes on chapelboro.com.